just talking about cards, talking about value, talking about rate.
And I'm just like, wow, what a card.
Who's like 9th through 12th best creatures are the best?
I hope he just ambushed the field. Is that fair to say?
Magic players aren't always known for their intelligence.
To really just push the power level of Forest.
We are an aging community.
That was a vicious backhanded compliment you just handed out.
When you get your face smashed in, it's hard to come back.
Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease, along with the guys who will be on the road with this week, Ryan Tibbetts and Matt Hurley. One of these things is making a much longer road trip than the others. But Matt, we hope you arrive in Minneapolis for the GP this weekend safe and sound, and we'll get ready for a lot of success in a limited format. Limited, it's front and center right now, as two GPs this weekend have plenty for us to talk about heading into our experience at GP Minneapolis. Was there any shakeup in Legacy, Modern, or Standard as another Team Trio event stepped forward? And as we recorded early last week, there was a bit of news that leaked out from Wizards that could have far-reaching ripple effects on how you experience the game. We'll reach back in time and talk about that all this week here on Tryhards. We get it started each week with What Are You Drinking? Matt, you're about to set out on the longest, loneliest trip. So what are you drinking this week?
Heaven Hill Bourbon. It's a super cheap bourbon, and one of Lauren's friends brought it over. But I actually kind of like it. It's the first time I've ever had it. I'm a fan. So definitely, I'd say pick it up. I think it's like $16 for a bottle.
Brian, what do you got in the glass?
After all my travels this past week, hitting Cincinnati, where I was able to experience the Rheingeist beer, which was quite delicious all week long, along with a bunch of other things. We stopped in Champaign, Illinois on our journey home and decided to grab some food and a beverage at a place called Triptych Brewery, which is a very, very up-and-coming brewery in Champaign. And they have a beer there called the Dank Meme, which is a hazy American pale ale. The can is hilarious. I will send a picture of the can, and maybe Sean can throw it up on the Patreon site. Really, really great. The hazy, kind of unfiltered. This brewery kind of prides itself on never brewing the same beer twice. So I'm glad I got to sample the Dank Meme after I took a 2-ounce sample of their not barley wine, their rye wine. No, I didn't go on an angry outburst at Lowe's or at Farm King, thankfully. 2 ounces was plenty.
We'll see if we can get some rye drinks in, Brian, while we're on the road, and whether or not that leads to matching silver bracelets being placed around him at any point over the weekend. The Dirty Bastard is what we're having here in the studio tonight. I felt just, even though it's been warm, it hasn't been super hot, and I felt like something a little bit thicker was the way to go this evening for episode 110 of Tryhards. Guys, what Magic did you play? Brian, I know you've been busy with travels. Were you able to play it all around your trip to Cincinnati?
I was. I got together with a few of the guys who are going to Minneapolis this weekend, and we've bought some product for the express purpose of, hey, here's 6 packs, let's crack them, build, let's play, let's talk about it, let's switch pools that you've either opened already, you know, switch around pools that we already have, and we're just kind of keeping these pools together and kind of getting people's ideas on there. And it's, I tell you what, it has been so much fun just talking about cards, talking about value, talking about rate, people pointing out interactions that they've seen with cards. So yeah, I was able to do that all yesterday afternoon. Very well worth it. And we are recording Monday, and I believe this same will be happening Wednesday evening. Dave Nash and probably 2 others will be coming over to do exactly the same. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, one of our traveling companions for this trip, Mr. Wolfmeyer, and I got together and did the same thing. We got a box and we busted a pool each. We built them together, discussed it, and then kind of thrashed them against each other, playing each for a couple games and then switching decks and going back and forth. And we've kept those pools together, and it'll be interesting. I took a picture on what we built, then shuffled them up to see if you guys come up with a similar idea. Other than that, some standard. I continue to work on the Jund project. It continues to be underwater against Blue-White God Pharaoh's Gift, but everything else has gone shockingly well. So I'm getting a little bit scared that there might be something here. You know, about this time is when it feels like the ground always falls out from underneath your feet. But Matt's been good enough to put in some time on it as well. He streamed a slightly different version than what I have sleeved up on stream last week. Matt, all the Magic you've gotten to play, or have you been looking forward to some limited practice for this weekend?
A friend of mine got back from overseas. Her and I were supposed to go play Magic Saturday, but her and I just hung out because Hadn't seen her in 8 months or something like that. I got the sealed in, and then I've been playing around with a blue, white, green Stoneforge build in Legacy because I do want to take a Legacy deck with me. And you know me, I can't do anything. You know, that's not against the grain at some point.
Looking forward to being in Minneapolis for a test of our limited skills this coming weekend. Guys, it's time for a Patreon raffle again this week. But while Matt gets some of that information queued up, I want to hit a couple emails that we got first. Andrew, thank you for emailing the cast. Guys, love the cast. Sean, you mentioned in last week's episode that you didn't understand why Najeela, this goes back to Brian's 3 minutes to brew, Najeela the Blade Blossom, gave the attacking creatures haste. This is because the tokens she puts into play are already tapped and attacking and don't themselves have haste, so on the second combat, they wouldn't be able to attack. I did miss that. I completely missed that, Andrew. You were the first one to email me. You weren't the only one, though. Thanks to Chris, who also followed up with the email. I was so glad to hear from people calling me out for missing that very key point about Najeela the Blade Blossom. You guys can laugh at me over that if you want. It's much deserved for missing that one. And this email from Brian, guys, not from Try Hard Brian, but rather from listener Brian. He goes into a number of things, and I'll hit on them real quickly. Thank you so much for doing the show. Enjoy the cast. Thank you, Brian. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. He gave us his version of what we did last week on unsolicited advice. The positives, he said, all the products that Wizard's been putting out. And I'm truncating this. The negative, Wizard still doesn't know how to communicate that effectively. I think we kind of agreed on that. And his suggestion was to do a better job selling the pro personalities. Brian, I think you touched on this about how the game is presented. You'd like to see more history, and that's a topic that we're going to talk about a little bit later in the cast. Brian, thank you so much for emailing us. But what I want to get to on this is he had a direct question for you, Matt. He said, Hurley, I'm interested in your thoughts on Standard. You say that it's, quote, just a bunch of mid-range decks. It seems to me that the last couple Standard formats haven't fit into that mold at all. You have an almost mono-red deck that has been the best deck in the format, a blue-white winless condition control deck that's been a week-to-week top-end competitor, and a God Pharaoh's Gift deck, to say nothing of the emerging Bolas decks. Matt, share your thoughts on why Standard is just, quote, piles of mid-range decks, because I think Brian brings up a good point. And thanks for the email, Brian.
Essentially, the blue-white winless deck is the first control deck, true control deck we've had since when Sphinx's Revelation was in. I'm not okay with that because I do love it, but even these aggro decks, you know, they're not topping out on three or four like they were at one point. The mono red deck kind of was, but you had some finishers with Hazoret, which that kind of pushes into the mid-range, in my opinion. That kind of pushes into mid-range. You got some weird top end as well there. When I think of the aggro decks, I always think of like the old Hellrider decks that won on turn four and didn't go to turn seven, turn eight, didn't draw six cards off their one drops. That's what I think of when I think of here's a mid-range deck is, you know, you're drawing cards, you're controlling the board. I'm just not a believer in a lot of where the format's going. It's the new world order. I know that's been around for the last few years, but it's, hey, we want to play to the board. We don't want to just have one permanent out and then you guys just play on the stack. Brian, I appreciate the email. I'll post this email onto the Patreon so that they can kind of read my thoughts as well.
Matt, thanks for sharing that. We'll look forward to having that up on the Patreon page. And Brian knows how to make sure that he makes the cast because he sent us a brewery recommendation. He said, if you guys make it up to the northeast side, I guess, of Minneapolis, make sure to check out Dangerous Man. It's the best brewery in Minnesota. So, all right. Brian is just thrown down the gauntlet for how to make sure you're mentioned on the cast. Make a beer or brewery recommendation, and you'll probably get in. All right, Matt, time for the raffle this week. It is your turn to put it up, and you have put up an original set of Vedalken Shackles. This is a card that I always think is on the cusp of a comeback in Modern. We'll see if that ends up happening or not. You say we've got 47 eligibles. I'm ready to hit the official randomizer device for the tryhards. Here we go, and we've got number two.
Avery Martin. I think Avery's won once before, but Avery is our $5 patron. Looks like Avery's been with us for about 16 months.
Yeah, long
so
time.
So we thank you very much for that, Avery.
Yeah, Avery's won before, but it's been quite a while. I remember that name. Congratulations, Avery. Vidalkin Shackles from Matt heading your way. That brings us up to this week's tournaments. Two outings for the M19 limited format. One in Sacramento, one in Chiba. In Sacramento, 1,253 players showed up, and Richard Liu took it down after two intense days of sealed and draft. And at GP Chiba, it was 2,471 competitors. Salvador Guillen Arnal ended up the victor amongst the other 2,470 who attempted in the field. That is a huge field for a limited GP. As we get set to take on the challenge of limited this weekend, Brian, did you spend any extra time watching limited Magic? Because we've mentioned before, not always the most exciting, hard to follow along. You don't know what the deck archetypes are necessarily or what plays players might have available. With this battle coming up in just days for us, have you found yourself more invested in? What have you learned that you liked in this limited format?
I wasn't able to watch any of Chiba, unfortunately. I was kind of going through a few of the deck lists and seeing things that way. But what I have been doing is trying to read a lot of articles about limited and about how the pros are, you know, approaching it, which I think a ton of people are doing at this point. So the thing that I really like, Segrist had a really good article on Channel Fireball about this very question and was kind of saying some of the things he's realized. And I think I agree with him. Small toughness creatures, no good in the format. There's just too many ways to get rid of small toughness creatures. The value is just not there. The larger creatures seem to be exactly what you want in this format, even if they're big, dumb creatures who don't have a lot of effects. And obviously, if you open a bomb rare, it seems good to build around.
Matt, this is just another format that's becoming 100% mid-range.
it kind of is. I got to listen a little bit to some of the coverage. Brian's right. Anything with like one toughness, there's a lot of three butts and a lot of two butts in this format. Anything with one toughness better be quite good for somebody to actually say, hey, I'm going to play this. And then the other thing is removal is premium. Now, I have seen where a lot of players don't like the Take Vengeance, which is the destroy target tapped creature, because it's very conditional. It seems like in this format, the first player to flood loses the game, or the first player to get mana screwed loses the game. You know, you really need your premium removal. You need a lot of go wides, and then you also need a lot of creatures that can block profitably or punch through damage. Flyers are really, really key as well. You really have to hit flyers whenever you can. After playing it a few times, it's a pretty good format. There's a lot of play to it. You really have to know the format well so that you can play sealed.
It's been interesting looking at a format that really lacks quality removal and depth of removal. I mean, Rabid Bite is viewed as a premium removal spell in this format. And it's also a format that seems to have a pretty flat power level outside of a couple of bomb rares and mythics. And when that happens, suddenly it becomes the, okay, you're not going wide in the traditional aggro sense of 1-1s and 2-1s, but it's almost like who can pack more quality 3, 4, and occasionally 5 drops into their deck. But getting a focused deck with enough depth that has quality so you can go wide with creatures that matter, also difficult to do in this format. So it almost feels to me like we're in this weird nexus where removal's not great. There's not that many things that can go over the top. And it becomes, okay, not whose first, second, or third creature is the best, but who's like ninth through 12th best creatures are the best. Because those are the ones that are going to be left on the board.
Sean, I agree with all that. The other thing that's kind of strange in this is typically your mythics are almost all bombs. All the mythics are not bombs. I mean, you obviously have some reprints in here, specifically Omniscience and Scapeshift, basically useless in this limited format. Really, Liliana is borderline unusable, and Sarkhan is eh. I mean, but then you've got Apex of Power. That's a mythic that's not really that powerful either. It's easy to look over your rares just to get quality, specifically like quality removal and a good synergistic deck that's going to draw through into the later game that you need in this format.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these decks come together when we get up to Minneapolis for the GP this weekend. SCG Philly had a team trio event. 244 teams got together for Legacy, Modern, and Standard. Congratulations to Barkun, Pastor, and Noga. They took it all down on Lands, Mono Green Tron, and Mono Green Aggro. This was essentially Team Green, Brian, getting it done. Now, there is a slightly greener deck in Legacy. They could have played Elves, Mono Green Tron, and Mono Green Aggro to really just push the power level of Forest for the weekend. I don't even think that's been said in Magic for quite some time.
Yeah. Testing you're right
the
about
power
that.
Level of Forest. As we look at the rest of the Day 2 metagame that shook out, in Standard, you saw Grixis Midrange, that's the Bolas decks, Red-Black Aggro, Mono-Green Aggro, Blue-White Control, Red-Black Midrange, and Mono-Red Aggro. Those were all the decks that had at least two copies. In Modern, you only had six decks with two or more copies. Amulet Titan, Mono-Green Tron each had two. Grixis Death Shadow, Mardu Pyromancer, Jeskai Control had three, and Blue-White Control had five. And then in Legacy, Miracle Storm, Infect, Grixis Delver, Lands each had two. Jeskai Stoneblade and Rug Delver, Teemer Delver had three. And Death and Taxes was the highest converting deck in Legacy with four copies. If you look at the top eights in Standard, Grixis Midrange with three for Red Black Aggro, one for Mono Green, one for Green Black Constrictor. In Modern, Blue White Control, Jeskai Control, Grixis Death Shadow, two Mono Green Trons. The two Mono Green Tron decks that converted to Day 2 met in the finals. So I guess it was good percentage-wise for Mono Green Tron. Might have to ban Ancient Stirrings. Amulet Titan, Storm, and Grixis Control. And then in Legacy, Jeskai Stoneblade, two Lands decks, Infect, Storm, Miracles, Sneak and Show, and Grixis Death's Shadow. Yes, that is the Grixis Death Shadow deck that we talked about some time ago that is playing the Shock Lands a la the Modern format, but it's backed up by the free spells that you get with Daze and Force of Will in Legacy, and it's proving that it can be a contender and put a real clock on you. Anything that you see that kind of opened your eyes from over the weekend?
If you would have told me that one of the highest converting Legacy decks in this new format post-ban was Jeskai Stoneblade, I would have agreed with half your statement and said, oh, I'm sure the Stoneblade deck is rising to the top, but I would be to say that it was going to be Jeskai. I would have put all my eggs into the Esper basket. I just think the disruption and everything else that I've really been like, huh, that seems pretty darn cool. And you look at the list and there's obviously a lot of power there. 12 creatures, along with going to get, you know, Batterskull, along with going to get a Jitte, the Meddling Mage, Containment Priest out of the sideboard. I think this looks like a really, really fun deck if you're going to go play Legacy sometime soon.
Matt, as you watch this unfold over the weekend, did anything blow your hair back? What little of it you have?
Oh, thanks. The deck that surprised me was the Jeskai Stoneblade deck. The reason it surprised me was, where were your Ajani's? I mean, I think one of the decks was playing Ajani, if I remember correctly. But, you know, you need some Ajani Vengeance in there. You need a little spice. But
I feel like you're just angling to get free beer this weekend, Hurley, and Sean's not biting.
I know. But no, I do love a Johnny Vincent. So that one surprised me. I did play against the Grixis Death Shadow deck while I was playing through with my Legacy Leagues. It's got some serious power to it. I mean, I would be a liar if I said it didn't. The ones that surprised me were like the Snuff Outs. That's what I was playing against. And I'm just like, wow, what a card. And I lost some games because of it. Unfortunately, when you ban Deathrite, you kind of wheel the clock back 18, 24 months before Deathrite was really like heavily played. You know, if you've been playing for a while, you see a lot of the same decks. It almost looks boring, but it's not really boring. So I got to say that happy to see everyone playing around. And I think if we see some 5-0s and a lot of online tournaments, I think we're going to see some really interesting decks coming up.
Yeah, individual decks got a chance to shine at the Classics over the weekend as well. Legacy had 168 players. Thomas Hepp on Sultai Depths, 2-0 Jeffrey White on Blue White Helm. The rest of that top eight, Miracles, Infect, Elves, Grixis Delver, Eldrazi Post, and Blue Green Eldrazi Post. Matt, you're the resident post player. What's the big difference between Eldrazi Post and Blue Green Post?
Blue-green just has, you have your Force of Wills, and typically play your Primeval Titan package, where your Eldrazi Post typically just play your more of your colorless package. So that's your big ones, but a lot of it is just the counterspell. I personally, you've heard me talk about this, I personally think it weakens the deck. With those types of decks, you're never going to be able to compete with the Jeskai decks, you know, the blue-white control decks, that style. So why even try? You just need to use a sledgehammer instead of a scalpel in those decks.
We'll see if that picks up going forward in this new old Legacy format. If Snuff Out can come back, I'm going to have to go back to my five-color Zoo deck from 7 years ago and see how that works. In Modern, 284 players, Ozzy Kelly on the deck that we're going to spend some time talking about, Skred Dragons, takes down Anthony Conlin, 2-0. Conlin was on Black Red Hollow 1. Brian, the rest of that top eight, Jeskai Control, Humans, Mardu Pyromancer, Blue-White Control, Blue-White Control, and Mono Green Tron. So pretty conservative for Modern in that top eight outside of Skred Dragons. What's in Skred Dragons, you asked? Well, I'm glad you asked me. Ratchet Bomb, Blood Moon, Draconic Roar, which is the two-cost lightning bolt that if you show a dragon from your hand, you can lightning bolt both the creature and the player. Lightning Bolt itself, Skred, the name of the deck, and then you've got Chandra Torch of Defiance and Sarkhan Fireblood, the new Sarkhan, teaming up to power out Thunderbreak Regent, Stormbreath Dragon, Glorybringer, and oh yeah, throw in some Scrying Sheets and Anger of the Gods to protect yourself against the Humans Rush, and you've got a first place deck, Skred Dragons. There's always room for innovation. Does this look like it has staying power, or did he just ambush the format field this weekend?
I hope he just ambushed the field. Is that fair to say? Because I do not want to play against Skred Dragons. just for those of you who are playing back during Cons of Tarkir block, any time that Thunderbreak Regent was either opened in draft or a sealed pool or in a constructed deck and it hit the battlefield, you're just like... And it was just one of those cards that was so hard to deal with because it hits the battlefield. If you don't counter it to get rid of it, anytime it becomes a target of a spell or ability, you'd have to take three. So it's almost like the way that Legacy players feel when they're facing down a Leovold, Emissary of Trest. You can get rid of Leovold, but it's going to cost you a card for your opponent to draw. This one costs you another three damage. And it's just a beating. And then, of course, we know how good Glorybringer can be. Stormbreath Dragon, for people who are not around during Theros block, is an absolute beating. Flying Haste, protection from white. This is a great, great call, I'm telling you, especially with if you can, you know, back this up with some Skred to get just basically keep the battlefield clear, those and Anger of the Gods. And then Draconic Roar, I think, is really the one that gives it the spice. If you're able to do three to your opponent and three to your opponent's creature, that is really where this deck shines. And then, Sean, you said it, backed up by the Planeswalkers. I really hope I don't see this. And if it does have staying power, maybe this is going to be like the big red menace in Modern going forward. And that'd be kind of fun to have to sideboard against this sucker.
You've got to love that mana base. 21 snow-covered mountains, one Cavern of Souls, two Scrying Sheets. Matt, is it too late to buy into any of those before they jump through the roof?
Well, I'm not sure about the Scrying Sheets. You have
It's already like a $10 card, so...
Just in the deck, I understand because it's a snow land, because you can scry, you know, you can essentially scry, but I feel like this deck never has extra mana to do it. I gotta say, I love it. It's sweet, and more power to you. And you know what? I hope they print more snow-covered stuff in the future, because having just that in the format is not as fun as it would be if it was a fully fleshed-out mechanic.
All right, snow permanents seem to be the way to get an angle on the metagame in Modern. We'll keep an eye on this one going forward. Standard, 142 players, Orlando Lucas on Grixis Bolas Midrange, 2-0'd Brad Bonin, who was on Mono Green Aggro. Mono Red, more Grixis Bolas, more Mono Red, Black Red Midrange, one Constrictor deck, and a Mono Blue Paradoxical Outcome deck. Brian, you've been toying around with, in Legacy at least, the idea where Paradoxical Outcome may have some untapped power and the format might not be ready for it in a, quote, innovation on Standard, which has just seen everybody jam all the good red, black, and blue cards around Nicol Bolas, the Ravager. Is it maybe time for Outcome to be the outsider that shakes it up?
Paradoxical Outcome is a silly Magic card. It's already made a splash in Vintage. I think it's just got a crazy power level, and if you pair it with things like Psymaster Thopterist, you've got something like that with, you know, the Aetherflux Reservoir. You've got silly cards doing silly things, at some point it's going to work. And it looks like that's what Luke Feeney made happen this weekend. So congratulations to you. That's pretty awesome. I love seeing these kind of monocolor decks crop up now and again. You don't have to worry about crazy, goofy mana bases. You just kind of have to play your cards on curve. And usually you can kind of get your opponent scratching their head going, I have no idea what's going on. And that's when they die is the very next turn. So, yeah, this is pretty cool. The Paradoxical Outcome is a really, really cool card. I think this one, War of Invention, has a ton of opportunities in all formats going forward. So it's good to see people continually brewing. And I think the classics on SCG are really, in some ways, those deck lists are more fun to look at than the open because you get to see where people are actually getting very, very creative.
Two tournaments coming up on the limited front this weekend, GP Turin and GP Minneapolis, and then SCG Indianapolis. They're going to feature Modern. It's going to be 2 weeks from now that you have the Pro Tour, which is the team format of Team Trios Constructed. I'm really eager to see what those teams pick out from the late evolving standard metagame to fill in on that seat and in Legacy, where you just had the shakeup with Deathrite Shaman and Gitaxian Pro being banned, and how that ends up playing out. Very excited to see that go down in just a couple of weeks. That's tournament action for this week. The news. We mentioned at the top of the show that since we recorded last time on Sunday, we missed the opportunity to get involved on a rather big announcement that WotC made that Monday. And that is the announcement that you can now have age-restricted events. This was handcuffed to a change on the official alcohol policy for WotC as well. You can now have tournaments in which you have an age limit or age floor. So if you want to run a junior series event, you can say only players 16 and under. Or if you want to have an adult night at your LGS, players 21 and over. Because WotC will now let you have alcohol at officially sanctioned Magic tournaments. This is a change from policy in the past. So you have some venues that are game stores that have the ability to serve. And WotC makes this clear. I'm not going to read all of the wording verbatim, but you can't be a pub who then holds an F&M and then takes everybody's money while they're drinking and playing. You have to be focused as a hobby store that also has the ability to serve, compliant with all your state, local, and laws, yada, yada, yada. But you can also let players bring it in, depending, again, on your state, local ordinances and what all you have to appease the regulations on the alcoholic beverage front. I think this is great. It lets LGSs in larger markets who want to have quote-unquote junior series do just that, and it also gives venues the opportunity to cater to a more adult crowd. Matt, my knee-jerk reaction was that Moonbase Market in St. Louis just made $1 million with this announcement. If you haven't gotten a chance to play there, they have a sweet play venue, and built into the corner of their building is a full-service bar. Last time we were there for a Legacy event, they made the announcement that you have to wear the wristband while you play because the policy was still no alcohol in an officially sanctioned event. Once you rip that wristband off, you could go up and get a drink. Now, they'll be able to combine the best of both worlds. Is that important to you, or is it more important to help grow the game that you can now have these specialty junior-related events, which we used to see with the junior series on a bigger level?
So I actually think it's more important to have the junior-related events. You know, Magic players aren't always known for their, how do I want to put this, intelligence, common sense. Let's go with common sense. While the three of us may learn to, you know, have a couple beers, play at F&M, no big deal, there will be problems with it. And so you have to have LGSs that are willing to essentially say, oh, I don't care that you spend $2,000 a week in here. You're an idiot. And you make your play experience much worse for the rest of the community. You got to have those LGSs that are able to regulate the alcohol side of things. The junior leagues, I think, are really important. On one of the other games I play, the Star Wars Destiny game, one of the issues we have, and it's pervasive in Magic, but not as bad, is that you get your competitive players who have the top tier decks. And in that game, it's much harder to get the cards, mostly because of availability, not because of pricing. So you have these younger people who come and play, you know, they just open up a starter and they get destroyed. It's hard for them to come back, even though mostly everybody forms a really, really nice community here. you know, when you get your face smashed in, it's hard to come back. Magic has the same thing, but having these junior leagues, I think, can really, really help out, because you're not going to get a lot of under 16-year-olds that are going to have just top tier decks every single time. I'm glad to see that they're getting with the times.
One phrase that WotC relied on in making the move to accept alcohol at events is that venues must still be, quote, a family-friendly environment. That is the overriding first responsibility that they want to see from these venues, whether it's your LGS or anywhere else. Brian, you've got a 10-year-old who's getting into the game, and you've made no bones about taking her down to the LGS. Is this in any way going to change your mind with this policy change from WotC?
She's 11, by the way, so it's even more interesting just because she doesn't look like an 11-year-old anymore, unfortunately. I'm absolutely in support of this because I feel like this is WotC's way of identifying the fact that Magic has just celebrated its 25th anniversary, and therefore we are an aging community, by and large, those who have been in the game for a very, very long time, since about Revised, Sean, when we got into it, and Hurley a little bit later, but not much. So that is just going to speak to, hey, there's nothing wrong, as you said, Hurley, with having a couple beers, playing some Magic, and doing that. You know, we were joking with some of the guys here in the Shark Tank, kind of like, hey, you could have titles of things like Drafts and Drafts. You could have a pint and pack, you know, kind of thing, you know, stuff like that. But I'm not also thinking like, oh, you pull a foil, you take a shot. That's not going to happen at LGSs anywhere. I don't think people are going to make drinking games out of Magic. God, let's hope not, because that would just be awful. We are able to really turn this into what it should be, is the LGS should have the option. If the LGS doesn't want to deal with the liquor license stuff, if the LGS doesn't want to have to deal with unruly people, you know, drinking on their establishment, fine. Then they don't have to do it. But right now it just puts the power back in their hands. And I think you can separate that. For larger LGSs, as you said, Sean, you can have the junior series kind of cater events to younger people. And who wouldn't, who's older in the community, want to come down and like watch and learn and cheer those, you know, younger players on? I think that would be a fantastic role for us ambassadors to do. And then on the other side, we get rewarded by being able to bring a six pack down, or, you know, get one off the tap while we're able to, you know, sit and play some Commander, play some Legacy, Modern, what have you. I think that would be a really, really fun night.
The one thing I want to ask you guys, and this is a kind of an internal discussion I was having about this announcement. Do you guys think this was financially motivated to, you know, allow your LGSs to make more money? Because as we know, a lot of LGSs are just glorified concession stands. I mean, that's, you know, they make their money off of drinks and snacks and, you know, sleeves, like not the actual Magic cards, but everything that goes with you sitting there for 4 hours. Maybe that was in the back of Wizards' mind to say, hey, look, these LGSs want to invest in a liquor license.
I think it's possible. I also just think it probably wasn't researched that heavily. I feel like Wizards has spent all their time and energy into trying to make sure R&D is getting the focus of their resources, which is exactly what should happen. And the marketing and, you know, the coverage, all that kind of stuff. I can't imagine that a huge, huge, huge conversation cropped up about this. I feel like this is one of those ideas that they're kind of like, huh, why not? Let's just see how it goes. Because really what they're saying is people can do this, but it's kind of out of, we're taking it off of the penalizing you for doing it. So let's see how it rolls. And maybe if they get a ton of feedback from the LGS saying this was a terrible idea, we can't compete with the big guy down the street because they're offering quarter drafts, you know, on F&M or whatever. Okay, I get it. But I think it's a good experiment. And I can't imagine people are going to be making most of their money on alcohol and Magic. It's going to be one or the other.
That's interesting, Hurley. You brought up essentially the LGS as a gas station or a C-store. Magic is your gas that's advertised to get people in the door, but they're making money off of the fountain drinks and the candy bars, which is essentially where LGSs are making their money right now. We'll see if that ends up being the case to play out. It's a different mindset to look at your LGS and understand sort of what they're doing to stay open for you next time you're in to visit. All right, tell us what you think about these changes. You can hit us up. All the contact information is in the show notes here on Try Hards. Brian, last week on episode 109, unsolicited advice, you asked WotC to delve deeper into the history of the game, to present some of the history, to use that as a springboard, to push more personalities in the game, to get involved in media that can be listened to, watched, and can show a greater breadth of the game. Star City Games recently started a series they're calling Flashback, and they used Todd Anderson. They used him as the subject of this video and walked him through his early days on the tour and his maturation as a player. This might not be the perfect one-for-one of what you were talking about, and I don't blame Star City Games for promoting one of their content producers. Is it self-serving in a way? Sure, but that's how the business model works. You're going to start promoting your own product first. Have you had a chance to watch this, and how close is this to something you may or may not have had in mind when you brought up this point?
It was funny. You would send a link saying, oh, hey, here's something. And I was like, what Flashback? I'm like, what is this? I check Star City every day. I saw nothing about this. So I kind of had to Google it. I couldn't even find it on the main site. And I was able to watch the video that you were alluding to, Sean. And I was thinking, and as I was probably 5-6 minutes into it, I was like, yes, this is exactly what I was talking about. About bringing back the history of the game and things. Now, it was a narrow focus, mind you. Star City is very, very good at promoting their players and their brand. Brad Nelson and Todd Anderson, they're very much neck and neck, I think, with the brand of SCG. Todd, in some ways, more so because he doesn't have the distractions of being kind of a pro tour guy like Brad is. So I think when you think about it, the guy who's had the most success on the SCG circuit, it is Todd Anderson.
That was a vicious backhanded compliment you just handed out.
Yeah, it was definitely a vicious backhanded compliment. You're right. But I love the fact that we got to see him rise up kind of in the early days. The first time he met Brad Nelson, they kind of leering across him from, the other side of the room. You just kind of assume they've been friends all along. And so that was kind of enlightening to see. No, Brad was kind of a jerk, as he called it to him. And Todd gave it right back to him and things. And now they're, great friends, et cetera. But it was great to see some of the decks that was being played, the years that he was referring to, kind of, this is the first event I top forward. Oh, this is my pet card from this tournament. There were glimpses of what I would love WotC and Star City to do a little bit more of, which is to really kind of chronicle the history of the game. But this is a great start, and I hope to see more, especially when you think about all the names who have had some connection with SCG over the years, whether it's BBD, whether it's Brad Nelson, whether it's Jerry T, Tom Ross, who is now working at WotC, probably is not going to be able to. They'll give him the gag order on that. But it just seems like a really, really great thing to at least get some kind of scope on hearing the stories from the pros from when they were first kind of breaking through into, the mainstream, when we were kind of like, who's that guy? Who's that guy who's top fouring that? Oh, okay, I guess we should watch out for him. That's really what it was. So kudos to SCG for a pretty insightful 20 minutes of your time.
There were more emails generated to us off of unsolicited advice, the episode. I guess we're going to have to do more ridiculous topics where we give our uninformed opinion, because I've had more responses from that than anything going back to Hurley's ridiculous picks when we did the top 20 lands.
I was waiting for that.
God bless.
Right, there's going to be another top list coming up in the not too distant future. So get your hate mail ready for that as soon as we get it lined up. But now the question is, are we going to be able to get the things that may be the subject of those ridiculous top lists in the way that we always have? Matt, you pointed out earlier before the show that WotC actually ended the WPN Direct program. For those people who aren't behind the scenes and keep track of this sort of product distribution and how Wizards supports LGSs and larger regional stores, what's this going to mean?
Just to do a quick rundown, the WPN Direct program is it has an official long title, but essentially it means that stores can order directly from Wizards without going through distribution. This is really important because when they order this, they actually get a set price. Let's say it's $72 a box. Once they get the set price and they order everything, this is after their initial shipment that they get from their normal distributor. The normal distributor sells it to them, depending on volume, over that $72 a box. But they're really bad with customer service. So usually, people would go through the distribution just to guarantee they have the product. Now, that's going to cause the price of boxes to slowly creep up over time for stores, so they're going to be making a little bit less money on the back end. That's really, really important. The stores will start to lose money, not necessarily lose money on boxes, but they'll make less money on boxes. This means that you might not see those crazy deals going on that you would, you know, if you order a case or whatever the case may be. You gotta be careful with this. Pay attention to what your stores are doing, because it will mean that they're probably making less money per box. And you also see the prices rise a little bit on these super value sellers that are on eBay. So you're able to get the products for a little bit less money than what your store will be. So I think it'll actually drive business to the stores. Maybe that's why they decided to turn on the liquor license rules, because they can actually say, oh, hey, you guys can make it up by serving liquor now. But I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work. Just something to keep in mind.
It's an interesting convergence. We'll see how this all plays out in the coming weeks, months, and years as WOTC puts their new policies into place. That brings us up to this week's elevator ride. You have to be this tall to enter, but will you be taller or shorter in the stack of bills that you're worth after Matt shares his opinion? Matt, what do you got in the elevator with you this week?
Paradoxical outcome foils. $4. This is a Kaladesh card that's rotating. It's starting to creep up. It's because people are starting to really see the power of this card in other formats outside of just vintage. Once this rotates out, there's definitely no more products being open. I mean, I could see in 12 months this being a $12, $15, maybe $20 card. Foil Paradoxical Outcome, pick them up at, I would say, under $5, and you're 100% safe for the next 12 months or so.
Foil Paradoxical Outcome, this week's In the Elevator here on TryHards. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Brewmaster, I understand you're going to do something a little different this week.
I was thinking about this. I could have thrown all kinds of stuff. We've had some spoilers from the Commander 2018. I was thinking, oh, yeah, there's still cards from M19 that would be really, really great to brew with. But as we kind of venture north to the land of 10,000 lakes, I was thinking it would be great, as we've all been cracking packs and doing the sealed pool and practicing and things like this. Is there a card that is not a rare or a mythic, common or an uncommon, that you cannot wait to crack out of your pack in order to build around? And I think it's a fascinating question, because it's going to say a lot about our playstyle, say a lot about what we were hoping to do that's going to have some staying power as we go forward through this huge gauntlet of 2,000 people plus, I'm sure, in Minneapolis. Hurley, I'm going to start with you. If you had your choice that you could open in your pool, what's it going to be?
I really like, obviously, removal. I think the card that gives you the most incremental advantage over time is Skyrider Patrol. A blue and a green for a flying 2/3 creature, which is already good on rates. And at the beginning of combat of your turn, you can play a blue and a green. When you do, put a +1/+1 counter on another target creature, that creature gains flying until end of turn. I just think that's a great card that you can splash in a lot of decks, especially within blue or green, because you have card draw on blue, green you have mana fixing, and you splash this card if you need to, but this card just gives you massive incremental advantage, and the only requirement is you having another creature on the board, which is not a high bar. I really like Skyrider Patrol. I think it's probably one of the better uncommons in the entire set.
Matt, that was a great pick. Skyrider Patrol has walked my dog in a couple of games that I've played. And it would be on my short list, but the card that I have come to love having the most, because it changes the game in a fundamental way when your opponent has to do math, is Poison Tipped Archer. This is the 2, a green and a black for a 2/3 reach death touch that whenever any creature on the board dies, your opponent loses a life. This is the card that, to me, has been the biggest game changer. You can splash anything as long as green is part of the equation. Matt, I totally agree with you on that. Poison Tipped Archer, to me, this is not a big commitment. You're getting a 2/3 with reach and death touch, and that second line of text changes how your opponent has to go about attacking, blocking. Can they go for the long game? Because you suddenly have this incremental advantage for just doing the things that you do in limited, which is attacking and blocking.
Sean, it's so funny. Both these cards were in my top 5 of uncommons that I would love to build around. Poison Tipped Archer just completely stonewalled me. I remember a game during the pre-release when I had a huge flyer that I thought was just going to take over the board. In the very next turn, my opponent played this, and I was not able to attack for two or three turns, and finally had to just kind of sack it into Poison-Tipped Archer because it was just like, okay, we've got to get this thing off the board, and I've got to start peeling something else that's going to change the game state. So, yeah, that is a board-changing card. And it can allow you to just set up in many fundamentally different ways, because that's all you're doing is whatever your opponent is throwing at you, it's going to end up getting beat by Poison-Tipped Archer. The card, gentlemen, that I am looking at that I can't wait, and I've seen this a couple times, including once I was able to do this myself, is Regal Bloodlord. Commitment to kind of a white-black deck, which is not hard to put together in this. This is a 2/4 flyer vampire soldier. At the beginning of each end step, if you gained life, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. White is not hard to get life gain out of in this format, and if you can get some recurrent life gain happening on a regular basis, Regal Bloodlord can just make an army of bats that can absolutely overwhelm the board, and you can just leave them back as blockers and swing in. A 2/4 body for 5 is not phenomenal with this other text. If you can engage this as kind of a full card, I feel like this is one that I would love to be able to build around.
The fact that all three of us chose multicolor gold uncommons, I think says something about our preferred play style. Matt picking the Simic combination, myself picking the Golgari combination, and Brian picking the Orzhov combination. I wonder what a mind reader would try to read into those picks as we get ready for this weekend. With this GP in mind, this adventure we're about to embark on, what you guys do to get better? Matt, what have you been doing to get better?
I've been trying to hammer out as many sealed as I could. I think this is a practice format. My big thing I wanted to practice was building my sealed pools quickly and correctly. Super important in this format. I really want to be able to hammer out that sealed pool in like 20 minutes and have everything, not second guess myself and have everything kind of flushed out within my pool. And then some of the play aspect, but mainly the build aspect is what I'm looking at.
Bring your own pre-sleeved lands. That's the tip that I give to all new players. It saves you so much time, and you've already got 17, 18 of your cards pre-sleeved. Just sleeving up sometimes costs you some time. I was able to jump on for the Wizards Arena stress test on Friday. Did it go well at the beginning? No, but I was able to use their markdown and get in so many looks at draft packs on the super cheap that it really helped me wrap my head around a format in Limited in a way that I haven't taken the time or the effort to do since Cons Block. And I can really tell when I look at decks and I look at packs that I open that I have a sense for sort of the power order, the hierarchy of where cards are going to be. And I can see some of the keystone cards of different archetypes. Just being able to do some practicing in an efficient environment has me more prepared for this weekend than any Limited format, as I mentioned, going back to Cons. Brian, what have you been doing to get better at Magic?
Cracking packs and sharing it with you guys, sharing it with the Shark Tank here. Getting the games in, I think, is great because some of the cards have some text on there that, you know, you think they do one thing and it actually turns out they do something else. That's something just to get those little kinks out of the way so you don't make those silly play mistakes in an REL environment, a competitive REL, environment. I think that's a big deal for me. Getting looks at cards, the appreciation you have for just kind of a depth of a set. If you don't draft it a lot, if you play a pre-release and then you kind of move on to whatever the standard deck of the moment is and things of that nature, sealed is a much different beast. You have to be able to evaluate cards quickly, and getting that practice in is so huge. I think that has been great. I've been able to narrow down my focus based on the rares that I've opened, see some archetypes kind of jump out as I'm going forward, and that's been a lot of fun. It's been really, really fun kind of making those choices and seeing what other people think, and you can argue with somebody till the sun comes up, and neither of you are necessarily right or neither of you are necessarily wrong, but it's just, you know, how's it going to do? So trying to pick that best, most efficient deck going forward, I think that's been really, really fun during this little season of prepping for Minneapolis.
Once this episode of the cast goes up, We'll be embarking on the road trip to GP Minneapolis this weekend. Oh, you brave soul. If you're there, come by, say hi. We'll have some play mats with us, and we'd love to talk to you. Until next week, when we record live at our VRBO. It's always an interesting show. See you then on TryHard.